Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Vivek Ramaswamy joins us to unpack the FTX scandal, and James O'Keefe uncovers a major child sex prostitution operation sponsored by our government. It's sick. It's sick. And then I ask the question, where do you guys stand on the horse race in 2024? Trump, DeSantis, email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Open up your podcast and type in Charlie Kirk Show and get your friends to do the same. Come to AmericaFest, amfest.com, amfest.com. That is amfest.com, amfest.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
One of the more confusing stories of the last month has been the Sam Bankman-Fried FTX story, the SBF FTX. Say that three times quickly. CoinDesk, which is some form of a blog slash news reporting agency when it comes to crypto, discovered an irregularity in one of FTX's sister companies. And that seemed to trigger what is now described as one of the great financial collapses of a generation. Sam Bankman-Fried donated anywhere between $30 to $50 million to Democrat causes this last cycle, now claims that he has no money. And then he did an interview yesterday with the New York Times. Allegedly went from being worth $25 billion to being worth nothing. I don't believe him. I think Sam Bankman-Fried is a liar. If you're able to take out money for political donations and pay taxes on it, I guarantee you, you are taking out money and pay taxes on it and buying real estate or buying stocks or bonds or putting money offshore. I think he's lying about his net worth for sympathy. But here to help us unpack this is a very smart person from Strive, Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek, welcome back to the program.
Good to be on. How are you, Charlie?
Good. So Vivek, there's so many different, you know, aspects to this story that I'm still confused about. But I think our time is best spent for you to explain to our audience, how should we think about the FTX scandal? What are the main lessons that we should take away here?
So I think there's a couple of lessons. Probably top of the list, Charlie, is that this was a guy who put on a do-good smokescreen, a virtue signaling smokescreen, donating tens of millions of dollars to the Democratic Party and related causes, calling for so-called responsible regulation of the cryptocurrency sector. A guy who was saying all of the right things that were ESG friendly. Actually, even one ESG rating firms assigned actually FTX a higher score on leadership and governance than they did to ExxonMobil, which is laughable. This is a guy who cultivated the appearance of being a virtuous actor, but was actually just a false prophet in the end. And I'm sad to say, Charlie, that is a lesson that the public continues to learn time and again. The people who strive to appear most virtuous, the people who actually try to put on the virtue signaling smokescreen, end up being often the most fraudulent ones in the end.
Yes.
Be it the CEO of, you could say, Volkswagen. This reminded me a lot of that, the emissions cheating scandal, to a lot of the other fraudsters we've seen. I think that's one of the top takeaways. The other takeaway, Charlie, is that whether or not it relates to cryptocurrency, a thief is a thief. He took customer funds, and this is a very complicated story, and there's a lot of technocratic detail, which we could go into. But if you cut through it all, at the end of the day, you have a guy who was entrusted with funds, stole those funds, used them for his own purposes, and that's theft no matter how you cut it. And so people shouldn't get lost in the complexity to see the basic point that if you trust someone else with your money, they can ultimately run away with it and use it for their own purposes. That's what happened here.
So Sam Bankman-Fried is saying he didn't break any laws. He's a liar. There are fraud laws all throughout the federal law registry. I mean, you're not allowed to give the appearance of one business purpose and then just do whatever you want with it. As a judge famously said, or a prosecutor said, when explaining how to enforce fraud, is you know it when you see it. And so, Vivek, for some of our listeners that don't quite understand the financial specifics of this story, can you explain how widespread, how big of a story is this? This is not some guy that did a $10 million scheme or a $20 million scheme. We're talking about a collapse of an exchange and the eradication and the disappearance of billions of dollars. That's what's so amazing, is that there's just billions of dollars missing and no one knows where it is. And Sam Bankman-Fried goes to the New York Times summit and cries poor. I mean, how do you lose billions of dollars? I mean, what is this, aid to Ukraine?
Yeah. So, well played, Charlie. I think I want to make 2 points here. One is, this was not a bunch of people who lost money who thought they were putting money into a risky startup and then lost that money. That's the kind of thing where you take the risk, and you know your money may not come back, like the investors in FTX themselves. This is customer funds that they thought they were using to trade on an exchange. So this is a really big deal when you look at billions of dollars of customer money vaporizing when they thought they were just engaging in trades on an exchange. So I think that's why this is such a remarkable point, Charlie, is this was not people who lost money as investors. These are people who lost money when they handed their money over to a custodian. And a custodian has the highest duty not to use those customer funds for their own gambles. Yes. And it appears, based on the facts, that that's exactly what he did. But the other point I want to make, Charlie, is that, you know, I also watched part of that interview at the DealBook conference, New York Times conference yesterday. And one of the things that was striking to me was looking at the people in the audience, right? They were laughing at him. They were distancing himself and distancing him out as one of the other, one of the members of the other, the weird looking young guy with a frizz ball of curly hair and wearing a t-shirt and shorts. He's the weird guy. I think the uncomfortable truth is that, you know what? A lot of the kings of elite finance, dating back to the 2008 financial crisis, don't have particularly clean hands themselves either. And in them, they actually, if they look hard, see a bit of themselves too, which is part of why this game of trying to distance themselves from him has come up so much. I mean, in 2008, you got people bailed out at the public fisc, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, Bank of America, all of whom took risks that they shouldn't have been taking, not with proper disclosures in many cases. And so I think one of the morals of this story is, yes, he's this weird dude who did a really bad thing at a large scale, but you know what? It's a familiar story. If you look at what happened with MF Global, John Corzine, former CEO of Goldman Sachs, political figure as well, involved in that business. That was an exchange that also misused customer funds. This is a pattern that's not specific to the Bahamas cryptocurrency 30-year-old guy who wears t-shirts and shorts. This is actually a moment for a lot of financial actors to look themselves in the mirror and a lot of customers to question their own motives. Even if they wear a suit and tie, it doesn't mean that they're not often guilty of the same kind of issue, different in degree, if not in kind.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. And I mean, Bankman-Fried is now going on a PR tour insisting he didn't do anything illegal. Let's play cut 101 of Crypto Boy, who stole people's money, refuses to take responsibility. Play cut 101.
I wasn't even trying. Like, I wasn't spending any time or effort trying to manage risk on FTX. I don't know what to say. Like, what happened. And like, if I had been spending an hour a day thinking about risk management on FTX, I don't think that would have happened. I think I got a little cocky.
Is that the understatement of, you know, the history of crypto?
Sure. So look, I went into that interview yesterday, watching it at least, thinking that he was going to be some kind of evil genius fraudster. I came out of it realizing that he was actually more likely to be an incompetent fraudster. That doesn't mean he wasn't a fraudster, but there was a layer of incompetence to this too. And it was sort of an amazing feat where the kinds of things that you would have expected to see in someone incompetent, sleeping through meetings, sleeping as people went in and out, not paying attention, those were vaulted by people as, oh, this guy must be some type of actual visionary genius. No, it turns out it actually was just what it looked like, is he was a little bit incompetent, a poor manager, but then also had bad intentions on top of that. That was one of my main takeaways from yesterday. And again, a pattern that yet repeats itself across multiple sectors and multiple other financial firms too.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Sam Bankman-Fried gave anywhere between $40 to $50 million to Democrats, maybe more. He gave a little bit to Republicans, allegedly. But if he gave only to Republicans, he would be indicted by now and the media would be calling for him. He paid his insurance bills over the last year and a half. He was not giving money to Democrats because he wanted a better world. He was buying life insurance.
Look, if you don't want to accidentally take a laxative and have the worst day of your life, listen to this. If you're currently taking a magnesium supplement, chances are you're literally flushing it down the toilet. I experienced that. It's not fun. You see, the most common type of magnesium is actually used as a laxative. So if you're taking it, you're probably, let's just say, depositing it in a place you shouldn't be. With 80% of Americans who are actually magnesium deficient, what if I told you you could be making that deficiency worse by actually taking the wrong kind of magnesium? Sort of paradoxical, isn't it? The worst part about magnesium deficiency is how it affects almost every aspect of your health. Your metabolism suffers, you can't lose weight, your blood pressure goes up, and a whole lot more. And the worst part is your sleep suffers. So what is the solution? It's called Magnesium Breakthrough. It's my favorite magnesium product that I continue to highly recommend. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually absorb. And this month, they're including free bottles of their full line of digestive health products on select orders while supplies last. That means you're getting free products to try that will support your digestive system. Having an optimized digestive system means less energy, trying to digest foods, and absorbing more nutrients from the foods you eat. This special offer is only available at magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. Visit magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. Enter code Kirk10 for 10% off any order. You need magnesium. Go to magbreakthrough.com/Kirk.
Vivek, why don't you tell us about the work Strive is doing as we contrast that up against the aloof boy fraudster who needs a shower, a haircut, and maybe a suit or tie if you're going to be interviewed by the New York Times. Sorry, this whole shtick that Bankman-Fried has, it's okay if you're worth $30 billion. You can get away with the, you know, the hungover frat boy look that you're kind of some sort of weird programmer. But as soon as you, I don't know, make people lose millions of dollars in their life savings, like, how about you clean up your act a little bit, pal? Sorry, side note. Vivek, tell us about Strive.
Sure, and thank you for your own support on it, Charlie, too. Appreciate that. But the thing I would say is one of the lessons is if you're going to stand for a principle, stand for that principle. You don't have to be everything to everybody. And I think even if you tie it to the SBF thing, just to tie up that discussion for a second, he didn't have to put up the ESG smokescreen. He could have just said he's a crypto exchange and everyone could have just judged him accordingly. My view with Strive and with everything I'm working on is that companies should focus exclusively on delivering excellent products and services to their customers for profit without apologizing for it and without putting on a show. And I think everyone is better off if we can do that. But the problem today is that you have other large financial institutions, firms like BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, that today are without the permission of their customers using their clients' money to advance agendas in corporate America's boardrooms that most of those everyday citizens actually disagree with. And so if you think about even some of the parallels here, you know, there are different issues, but there are parallels. Okay, SBF used customer funds to advance personal agendas, in this case, personal financial agendas, without disclosing it and without getting the permission of the customers. Well, what do you think is happening at other large asset managers like BlackRock on down, where they're using their clients' funds to vote for social agendas without getting their clients' yes. permission, without asking their clients, that do not advance their best financial interests? There are parallels here that bear mention. Now, Charlie, my view is the best answer often to market problems is market solutions rather than just more regulation or government action. And my view is that if everyday Americans, or there's a lot of them certainly, who don't want to advance political or social agendas with their capital, one-sided, toxic, progressive agendas with their investments, to be able to say that the voting power and the voice you get as a shareholder in America's companies, use it to tell them to focus on products and services, to make a profit, to get out of politics and not apologize for that. And my own view is also, it's important for financial institutions to be really upfront about who they can represent and who they can't. And my view is if you want with your own money to advance a social or political agenda, climate change, racial justice, or whatever, this is a free country. And if it's your money, you're free to do that. Strive would not be a good home for you as a client, as a customer, would not be a good home for your capital. And I think we need more financial institutions to be transparent about for whom they can be a good representative, for whom they can be a good fiduciary, and for whom they cannot, even if that means sacrificing some business opportunity to be able to get someone else's money and manage it and charge them a fee. You actually operate with higher integrity if you say what you stand for and what you don't. And I think that integrity is something that we're missing in much of the financial services industry today.
So Vivek, that's really smart. How do people buy your ETFs or the instruments that you guys have currently available at Strive?
I mean, they're exchange traded funds. They're index funds. They trade on the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. And you can look up Strive.com to get more information about Strive. But for me, Charlie, this is less about me and less about, you know, my company and more about hopefully a broader movement we create in the private sector that creates a tide that actually lifts the cultural boats through the economy itself. And I hope more entrepreneurs are able to step up, including in the financial sector, including other sectors, to say that there are probably 100 plus million Americans whose money is being abused by other financial institutions by advancing social agendas they don't know about. I mean, when Apple writes a multi-million dollar, $100 million check to advance racial equity, or a company gives money to Black Lives Matter, that is not their money. That is your money. When a company funds defund the police, that's not their money. If you're a shareholder in that company, that is your money. And I think people waking up to that reality, that's actually the mission I'm on through Strive, is an educational mission to say that if that's not something you want done with your money, you deserve a different option. And so, you know, people are free to, you know, learn more about Strive, and that's great. But it's less about me and less about the commercial impact here and more about what capitalism.
It's so important. It's so important. Full disclosure, I'm a supporter and involved in Strive. I think they're terrific. I think they're great. But I think, and I've looked through it, I encourage everyone to check out the website. I think they're wonderful. Vivek, thank you so much. God bless you and keep fighting. Really great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Offers for free iPhones are usually too good to be true. Just like freedom itself, nothing is free. Mobile phone companies not only lock you into long-term contracts, but they also build the price of the phone into your bill with hidden fees. With Patriot Mobile, they can show you how to get that same iPhone interest-free without the games and no contract. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They offer nationwide coverage on the best 4G and 5G networks because they use the same towers as the major carriers. So you get the same great service while supporting a company that's fighting to preserve our God-given rights and freedom. Patriot Mobile also offers a performance guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch to either one of the three major carriers they provide for free. I love Patriot Mobile. You've got to check it out. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call their 100% U.S.-based customer support team at 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation with the offer code Charlie. If you're fed up with the woke companies that don't care about your values, go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie.
Joining us now is James O'Keefe, who I have an unbelievable amount of respect for. He has courage, and he loves his country. I love Project Veritas. They're very special. James, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Charlie. Great to be with you.
So, James, tell us about your latest story. Traffickers exploit illegal child labor with Social Security fraud. Minor forced to leave school and work 10-hour shifts, paying back cartel debt. So, James, take your time. This is a very confusing story if we go through it too quickly, in my opinion. So the floor is yours. Walk us through it.
This is a U.S. Department of Health and Human Services whistleblower, a current federal employee who came to us. Tara is her name. Tara Rodas. She works for something called the Council on Inspectors General on Integrity and Efficiency. And she brought us documents, Charlie, from Texas. These are addresses of a sponsorship program. This is a program where the federal government gets sponsors to take unaccompanied children from Mexico, Guatemala, and put them in addresses. And she says that the government knew these children were being trafficked. And she brought it to the attention of one of her colleagues there at Health and Human Services in the federal government. And she was told by this government official we don't get sued by the cartels. So there's nothing that we can do about this. So this whistleblower came to Project Veritas, very brave woman, blew the whistle on the whole program, children being trafficked. Our undercover journalists went to these addresses in Texas, interviewed the people at the addresses, and these young girls admitted to us they were being pimped out by their sponsors. So children are being trafficked, exploited, raped, and the government knows about it. And this brave woman, Tara Rodas, came out. She was brave. She came to Project Veritas and told us the whole story.
So James, when you say pimped out, I think of Acorn. Do you mean that these children are being used as sex slave prostitutes, or do you mean they're being pimped out for manual labor?
They're being pimped out for sex in this case. Some of these children are being given labor, and some of these children are being pimped out for actual sex. In this case, one of her sponsors was pimping her out, and she says the words on tape. We blurred these children's faces. We spoke to hundreds of children. Our undercover journalists who speak Spanish were knocking on the doors of these addresses that the federal employee gave us. And we went to their doors, and you could see their faces. You could see their lips moving. These young children were admitted to being sold off for sex when they got to the United States, and they lived with these sponsors who are supposed to be housing them. But some of these children were living in little studio and one-bedroom apartments with multiple older men.
And these individuals are underage. They're let's say, younger than 18.
Yes, this girl in particular was 15. And the sponsors are typically not actual American citizens. They're not permanent residents. Tara told us they don't have a legal presence. And there's multiple older men living in the same room as underage children. The government, Tara showed us her government laptop, showed us stuff on the laptop, showed us addresses, and we went down there. We're in touch with the authorities right now. There are multiple state and federal crimes with this. I wonder where our FBI is. We know that they've been raiding Project Veritas and school mothers and priests and so forth. I don't know what they're doing. Why aren't they looking into this sort of situation? But we think the authorities will act on this, Charlie, because we have now caught the young children on tape admitting to being trafficked and exploited. What's most shocking about the expose, I think, is this woman, Catherine Bond is her name. She was a lawyer with HHS who worked with Tara. And she told Tara that, listen, you know, we don't get sued by traffickers. So they didn't take any action. This is an example of just a program so filled with abuse. And HHS, Charlie, Health and Human Services, is a $1 trillion government agency. So this is just how broken the sponsorship program is.
So it's fair to say then this is government-sponsored child sex prostitution. This goes back to Biden. This goes back to Mayorkas. This goes back to HHS ex-secretary. I think it's Javier Becerra. I think that's his name, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Who's in charge of HHS. And so this is extraordinary. I mean, this is on the same level, if not even more troubling, James, than your original expose, as I mentioned previously, Acorn. I mean, this is taxpayer-funded pimping out young girls who are 15 and 16 to our country to be prostitutes for men, and the media won't be bothered, and law enforcement is too busy trying to indict Donald Trump and or raid your apartment?
Yeah, Rodas, here's how Rodas said, this is the whistleblower, and she's very brave. She currently works for this council. She's a current federal employee. It's not like she's a former federal employee. She's speaking out, which is very, very rare. She has skin in the game, Charlie. She could get fired for this. Although I spoke with Catherine Bond at HHS, and she actually spoke to me for 30 minutes on the phone yesterday. But here's what Rodas said. She said, the sponsor can hold up an order of deportation to sponsor these children. They can hold that order of deportation up to a migrant child and say, this is your order of deportation. If you do not do what I say, when I say, I'm going to call ICE on you myself. So Tara said that we, the taxpayers, are paying to put children in the hands of criminals. And the government knows it. They have the addresses of these people. They know who are doing the trafficking, and nothing is happening. And that's why Tara came forward to blow the whistle, because they know the names and numbers of these people. She showed me their faces, but nobody's being prosecuted. In fact, the HHS lawyer said, well, we don't get sued by these traffickers, so we don't really have anything to worry about. It's just an example of how broken it is. And the only way this is going to change if we expose it, which now the video has millions of views on Twitter. Thanks, Elon Musk, for getting Project Veritas back on Twitter so we can publish this actual journalism. Very few people are doing actual journalism and telling these stories and getting the exposure I think at least, Charlie, the state authorities, the Texas Attorney General, and now the Florida Attorney General, those are the two states this is happening in, will do something about it.
I sure hope so. So walk us through part two, which involves Social Security fraud.
Yeah, in this part two of this video we released yesterday, you actually see a guy admitting to the Social Security fraud. He says he gets a fake Social Security card. And this is, again, in Florida. She gave us addresses for both Florida and Texas. This is where this was happening. This is an underage guy. We redacted his last name. We don't want to put full names of these underage children. But he said he was started working to pay and cancel his debt. He said he can't work here legally. He holds up the small piece of paper that you get to be able to apply for a job, a Social Security card. He says you just call the person. He comes to your home and brings it. A young man named Frander says he was forced to pay $150 to obtain a fake Social Security card. When he got to the United States under the sponsorship program, he began studying and working. He went to school for 6 months. He would go to work at 4 p.m. and get out at 2 a.m. So it's an example of the sort of child labor exploitation. They make you work wherever they take you. This is not just sexploitation. It's manual labor exploitation. Most people, this sponsorship program was intended, people originally thought, to bring these children in with families and reuniting children with their families. In fact, that's not the case, the whistleblower tells us. And it's a terrible thing. You look at these children. You can see it in the video there. They're teenagers, 12, 13, 14 years old. They've never been to school. They can't read. Some of the children don't even speak Spanish. They speak a native dialect of Guatemalan. So we're really Project Veritas is taking you really in to see how broken the system is. It has drifted away from its original intent. And you compare and contrast that with what the White House press secretary says or what our elected officials say about how secure the border is. It's mind-boggling.
Well, you've done wonderful work at Project Veritas exposing this, James. It's just, this should make you fuming with anger what our government is doing, and they don't care. They are sex trafficking children that then become teenage prostitutes to go pay off cartel debts.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I look forward to seeing you and at the Turning Point next month. And I hope everyone will consider donating to Project Veritas because this journalism is expensive and necessary.
Very good. Check out Project Veritas. Terrific. Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Your opinion, your thought of the 2024 horse race certainly is something that I get a lot of questions about every event I go to. Charlie, what's your opinion? What's your opinion? And I've said my perspective is I am behind Donald Trump, but I'm also very pro DeSantis. I don't like any of the negative DeSantis stuff. I think DeSantis is a once in a generation leader. I really do. DeSantis is special. I'm pro America first and foremost, by the way. I'm interested kind of in this survey. This one person says, Charlie, I just don't think Trump's heart is in it. I don't know. Another person says, Charlie, I'm 100% behind Trump. I don't think we should even entertain the idea of DeSantis. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. If Ron DeSantis were to run for president, which I have no idea if he's going to run for president or not. If Ron DeSantis were to run for president, one of the sharpest critiques of President Trump will be the fact that Anthony Fauci stayed around as long as he did. Anthony Fauci is still running his mouth. Let's go to cut five. Anthony Fauci talking about how Republicans politicize COVID. Play cut five.
They've clearly politicized it. You know, they say that I'm not political at all, period. I've never been. But it is very clear when people are running their campaigns with an anti-Fauci element to it. I'm not going to get involved. I didn't get involved before in the politics, and I'm not going to get involved now.
Continues, he says that the reason why we couldn't get to the root of the problem, it was the Trump administration's anti-China. If Ron DeSantis were to run for president, President Trump would have to navigate, and I think he would do a fine job, but it would be a challenge of why on earth did you keep Anthony Fauci around so long? Play cut four.
The anti-China approach that clearly the Trump administration had right from the very beginning and the accusatory nature, the Chinese are going to flinch back and say, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to talk to you about it, which is not correct.
But they're not talking to the Biden administration about it either.
Exactly. I think that horse is out of the barn, and they're very suspicious of anybody trying to accuse them. We need to have an open dialogue with their scientists and our scientists. Keep the politics out of it.
If DeSantis were to run for president, just based on my connection to our audience and speaking to you and listening to you, I would say that the one issue that would probably be the greatest challenge for Donald Trump that he would have to navigate is some of the personnel that he's selected in his administration. I think even the strongest pro-Trump members of our audience completely agree. And by the way, the emails are flooding in, very pro-Trump, very much so. 100% behind Trump, 100% behind Trump. So one person says, I used to be behind Trump. However, now I really want DeSantis. I do not think that Trump can win. Okay. I'm just curious to kind of see where you're at so I could just keep a pulse on, because you guys are the grassroots of the grassroots. I take my orders from you, from the audience, in the sense of you guys have collective, a lot more collective wisdom than I ever could. But I think it's very interesting. It's there's plenty of strong, there's a lot of anti-Trump sentiments too, but it definitely, I would say that Trump definitely is the favorite. But Trump would have to explain in the 2024 horse race, which is down the road, but it's interesting to think about. Why did he keep so many of these snakes around the administration? I think that would be the greatest challenge for him, is personnel. You got John Bolton, Omarosa, Rex Tillerson, Bill Barr, one after the other after the other. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Deborah Birx. As Rush Limbaugh would say, and he never said anything negative about Donald Trump. He said, Donald Trump's personnel selections at times are puzzling.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.